You're listening to Radio Area.
Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, a woke, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One word more for signal token, whistle up the marching tune, for your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, with your pike upon your shoulder.
Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. The date is Thursday, June 13th, 2019. I'm Andy Donner, and this is Radio Free Northwest.
For the blessed warming light, farmers passed along the valleys like the banshee's lonely croon, and the thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon.
This week I had planned to comment on the YouTube censorship situation because it relates very closely to the subject of capitalism and how the NAR draft constitution would treat free enterprise. As it stands, there have been some late developments, and my voice is running out anyway, so I'm going to deliver the initial talk I had planned and leave it at that for this week. All in all, this is actually a good thing because the short talk I have planned for this week could be called Don't Forget the Basics. Some certain basic facts need covered before I can adequately address the YouTube censorship thing, as well as some recent criticism of the NAR draft constitution, and it's probably best that I don't try to do so this week. Most of you will remember that several weeks back I answered a question about how to detect crypto Jews. My answer was not well received, and you might think that would irritate me, but actually I approve. I approve so much that I'm going to fast forward the thought process and see if I can't let you all in on the secret. My answer to the question of how to detect a crypto Jew is that you don't really need to worry about it because Jews can't help but be Jews and will always expose themselves to you over time. They'll make some remark or let a personal reference slip or in some other way that I can't predict right now will just simply announce who and what they are. That has worked for us from the dawn of time and I suspect it always will. Truth be told, I understand why that's frustrating. It's not at all the sort of answer anyone would have expected of that question, but it is the right one, and I stand by it. And as I said, I actually approve of the frustration, because it indicates a mind trying to figure things out. The expected answer, though, required some sort of oracle that I could look into to tell when a crypto-Jew is hiding something, and that doesn't exist. If you stop and think about that long enough, you'll realize that this is actually very liberating to anyone concerned with the subject of crypto Jews. You needn't go on any sort of low-level detailed hunt to discover someone simply because they're not going to reveal themselves until they reveal themselves. And yes, I'm fully aware that what I just said could be construed as even more frustrating than my previous attempt at answering this question, but there's a reason for it. You'll notice my response lacks any sort of profundity whatsoever. There's nothing sublime about it, there's nothing intellectually appealing, there's nothing emotionally serene about it. It's not any sort of special experience, it just is what it is. It's basic, and that's because this question only requires a basic answer. Over all of Radio Free Northwest's history, everything produced on this program has been subjected to some sort of Kabbalistic exercise in rooting out our actual meaning and whatever we are hiding in code that someone thinks should be plain. Quite frankly, it seems as though many of you think we're hiding some sort of a secret, and, well, we kind of are. The secret is, there's no secret. While it's true Harold Covington would beat around the bush on certain matters, and from time to time I've been forced to do the same, we're not actually hiding anything. There are no coded messages, and there is nothing for you to decipher from any of the words we have ever uttered on this program, and there doesn't need to be either. So throw away your secret decoder rings, but you may still drink your Ovaltine if you are so inclined. It's true some of my answers may be frustratingly basic, but here's the deal. The basics whether it be crypto Jew hunting or any other matter of white nationalist ideology, have saved us before, and the basics will save us again if we apply them. Trouble is, you have to observe the basics before you can apply them. Having said all of that, I'll move on to quickly answering the question I was sent from a local comrade about the potential 51st state here in Washington. This local comrade sent an email asking about a Como news report he saw about a bake sale held by the Liberty State Gala, which was in support of the 51st state that is attempting to create itself in eastern Washington. And to sum up his email, he basically asked for the NF's position on the 51st state movement. Well, here you go. The basic answer, which is the most important answer I could give you on this subject, is as follows. It is very true that this comrade points out that, in theory, we would be willing to accept a peaceful solution rather than a violent revolution. Let's face facts, none of us actually wants the violent revolution. That's absolutely true. As with every other variant of the Beaver-Cleaverville solution, though, or I should say non-solution, this attempt at Beaver-Cleaverville is simply Beaver-Cleaverville on a state level and has all of the problems Beaver-Cleaverville would have, again, just on a state level. In other words, it is no such solution, and quite frankly, we don't really care about it. In fact, if anything, we're very opposed to it because it's a distraction from the main event, which is to create an all-white independent sovereign nation here in the Pacific Northwest. A 51st state carved out of eastern Washington would in no way go towards that objective. Now, the local comrade actually asks a fascinating question in his email, and that question boils down to whether or not this 51st state would then have to see their problems as identical with the NF. And the answer is no, they wouldn't. Many of the personalities involved in pushing for this particular secession attempt are effectively former white nationals that have tried to distance themselves from racial politics. That right there should tell you what the real game is here. This is some sort of kosher conservative attempt to get away from liberal politics of Washington state. There's nothing revolutionary about it, and there's nothing that's any different from any other misguided secession attempt going on anywhere else in America, and there are always a few of them popping up in various states such as Northern California, parts of Texas, heck, all of Texas at some point. Ignore these things, because they have nothing to do with the actual solution. This comrade's email very astutely observes that he thought we were about getting concrete, real-world results. Well, we are, but this wouldn't be one of them because these things never amount to a hill of beans. But even if they did, this isn't our result, so it has nothing to do with us. In fact, I'm going to give this comrade all due praise and paraphrase his email where he answers his own question, even if he didn't realize it. To paraphrase his email, the 51st state would only be allowed from the Veltfiend's point of view as a strategy to deal with various problems, and it would only corral conservative whites to deal with them later. That's exactly what we've always been taught by Harold Covington about Beaver-Cleaverville, and I repeat, this is Beaver-Cleaverville on a state level. I've said it a couple times this show, but I'm going to say it again. I actually applaud this way of thinking. Granted, it's not using the basics, but that's all the more reason it matters. When you think in these ways long enough and explore the subjects this deeply, eventually you'll come to the realization that there's no secret you're hunting, you just need to apply the basics of what you already know to generate your own solutions to these problems. All I'm trying to do today is accelerate that process and remind you that the basics are far more important than anyone thinks. When you apply the basics correctly, you can almost always solve most ideological problems very quickly. You might think I'm being especially bland and uninteresting right now, but nothing could be further from the truth. Many of the decades-long character problems in white nationalism have boiled down to massive failures to apply the basics in a productive and useful and consistent way. Never ever think the answers we give you are off the cuff or ill-considered or otherwise slapped together last minute. They're not. The trouble is, it takes people an awful long time to realize that. And like I said, I'm simply trying to help you get there faster for everyone's benefit.
Good evening, comrades. Tonight I'm going to be discussing Matt Hale's Racial Loyalist Manifesto. Now, at the beginning of this book, Hale discusses his long history in the movement. While the author sees value in both the political and religious angles, this book will deal in politics. Now, of course, this is the politic that goes beyond the current popular dichotomy of liberals and conservatives. And, of course, this has been known for some time to be too limiting, although I'm sure we've all been guilty of using these terms as a form of shorthand. Nor will this book be about Western values per se. This author is solely concerned with what is good for whites. That is the only question this author ever has. Now, as an example, Hale talks about how many people in the mainstream will praise President Nixon for opening China to the West. But the author says that this created a situation that led China to grow and eventually compete with the West. The author notes that whites should always want less of any competing racial or ethnic group, not more, and all white government and society should be entirely devoted to the cultural and genetic preservation of white people. Now, this author does have a strongly different notion compared to the NF with regard to the notion of streetwalking. He believes that demonstrations will increase public awareness and sympathy, and the author notes that very few individuals are intellectual enough to read books or attend seminars or watch complicated YouTube videos. However, the author does caution that these demonstrations ought not to get out of hand. The author also seems to be advocating a kind of entryism. The author talks about a group or a hypothetical group that he hopes would one day exist called the Racial Loyalist Party, but notes that those running for office might need to run under some other party name. However, the author also indicates that an individual should be open about their views. So he seems to be describing a kind of Tea Party entryism. The problem with this kind of entryism, and certainly this has been done by various individuals and groups, and it was done by David Duke when he went into the legislature, but this can cause, in some respects, a certain diluting of agenda in some sense, because there's a lot to governing that really is not directly racial per se. At any rate, this author really advocates that the many organizations that exist today ought to consolidate into various mega-regional groups to form these racial loyalist parties. Now, all of these parties should ultimately be independent of each other. They will need to assess local conditions and adjust themselves accordingly. And always, these parties should steer government into the direction of service to the white race. Now, Hale notes that also, too, if it came to that, secession can actually be entirely legal, and he notes that states can be and are reordered over the course of historical times, and he talks about the example of Virginia, for example, separating into Virginia and West Virginia. The author states that this movement is really the only natural cause in the world, and the author boldly states that liberal democracy is the tool of the Jews. And of course, liberals and conservatives are the unwitting helpers. Then there are also the immigrants who will use a liberal democracy and then grow in numbers and strength and over time instigate something, perhaps Sharia law in some cases, or other society that will meet their needs and interests. The author says that white peoples need to inoculate themselves, and they need to do this with an entirely new attitude. The author talks about how life is a social and collective adventure, and this author has many ideas about social organization that you can really see are taken directly from the Third Reich. He talks about a certain cap on earnings, for example, a cap on earnings for company executives. And any earnings that they might have gotten over this cap would be put into public funds. And also, he talks about changes in the legal system, talking about a legal system that would rely on facts more than presentation. The author also supports notions of genetic testing and also eugenics. This author is against having prisons, but is for work camps. Now, this author also wants to drive home strong views on white solidarity. Hale stresses that there is really no East or West Europe. There's only the white race, and if anything, Slavics are to be praised for fending off so many invasions over the course of history. The author also notes that many Slavics helped the SS to fight communism. The author also praises the Germans for the development of the Reich and states that only Jews benefited from the aftermath of the Second World War. The author states that we need both racial loyalty and Jew awareness. Hale really wants the white race to start advancing again. There's been really just too much retreat. He would like the Germans to take back Königsberg, but he also would like the Slavics to take back Kazakhstan, so regaining former territory that had been taken by the Mongol Turks so long ago. Today, we're told that racial loyalty is based in hate. And the author notes that anyone who said this was either a fool, because all change begins with the catalysts of hate, according to Hale, or they're a genius for telling us that hatred is wrong. The author knows that every individual is going to calculate the degree of risk that they're personally facing, and the author also notes the fashionability of discontent, and restates that right now he sees this movement as one that does not have a clear brand, and he believes that these racial loyalist parties will create a clear and uniform brand that will bring about more public sympathy than currently. So once again, I've been reviewing Matt Hale's book, The Racial Loyalist Manifesto, and this is available on Amazon for a very reasonable price if you get the Kindle version. So I hope you enjoyed this discussion. Have a good evening, and hail victory, comrades.
Greetings, everyone. This is Comrade Jason here to talk to you about the party's recent efforts at reestablishing email contact with you, which have been very successful. We have linked back up with longtime party supporters, and the response from newer contacts has been excellent as well. Since Harold held the keys to the kingdom, when he died, we were left with only sparse awareness of whom we had out there as the party's biggest supporters and resources. We asked you to reintroduce yourselves to us, and a great many of the people on our lists complied. We're pleased to be back in touch, and are already lining up future projects with several of you. One of the more interesting results to come from our outreach is our re-established connection with some of the dedicated white heroes in Europe working to maintain the valuable online website Metapedia as a resource for all of us on the web. More specifically, this contact was from a group of our white brothers and sisters from Deutschland. If you don't know about Metapedia, you need to. It is an online encyclopedia that is oriented toward the rational acceptance of the truths about race, society, history, and civilization, which we have allowed Jewish propaganda to effectively purge from the modern world. Here's the description of Metapedia from its own About page and mission statement. Metapedia has a metapolitical purpose, to influence the mainstream debate, culture, and historical view. Another important purpose of Metapedia is to become a web resource for pro-European activists. Metapedia makes it easy for our cadres to expand their knowledge on various important subjects, and also functions as a searchable reference. Furthermore, Metapedia gives us the opportunity to present a more balanced and fair image of the pro-European struggle for the general public as well as for academics, who until now have been dependent on strongly biased and hostile, quote, researchers, unquote, like Searchlight, the Anti-Defamation League, Southern Poverty Law Center, Simon Wiesenthal Center, and such. Our German comrades informed us that Wikipedia was begun in August of 2009 by the Swede Daniel Freiberg, who remains associated with the project along with others across Europe. From their milestones section on their Facebook page, I learned that from 2006 through 2007, the site expanded into Danish, German, English, French, Portuguese, Czech, Slovak, Spanish, and Hungarian languages, all within a single year. By 2009, the Hungarian site alone had 80,000 articles, and the German had 30,000 by 2012. This is impressive by any standard. So you see, in short, Metapedia is a white nationalist Wikipedia. It is ours, yours and mine, and miraculously still holds a place of prominence on the web. It has become a major online resource, and this is a testament to our European brothers and sisters, and we need to support them and help it grow. All white nationalists should remain aware of it, and we must support and protect it, because it is for us, and it is ours. Our German comrades have informed us that the various European language versions of the site are robustly supported and continue to grow, while the English version is still lagging and is currently stagnating, at least in comparison with the rest. They have asked for the Front's assistance in making this known and that they are seeking effective English language writers to expand the information on the English side. Now, I know personally that several of you out there listening now are excellent writers and thoroughly interested in history, philosophy, government, and the white man's science. The party would like nothing better than for some of you to hear this message from our activist brothers and sisters overseas and contribute to the usefulness and longevity of Metapedia by writing articles for them and expanding the knowledge base there. And, of course, all of you should seriously consider helping them out financially. As you can imagine, Metapedia has been targeted repeatedly for years by denial-of-service attacks, attempts to deplatform them with internet service providers, and the same kind of cyber censorship that is now in full swing by internet titans like YouTube, Google, Twitter, and Amazon, not to mention PayPal and even banking and credit card services that are fundamental to the functioning of modern society. They have fortunately been saved several times in the past by timely infusions of cash from dedicated European white racial patriots, along with the services of a European web host by the name of ZensorFree.com, which translated from the German is censorship-free. Thank you, ZensorFree. As the suppression and censorship of white patriots all around the world becomes worse and worse, we will come to rely much more heavily on sites like ZensorFree, who still believe in liberty and freedom of speech. The white resistance is indeed worldwide, and we need to support one another across national lines, as we know. So see what you can do for Metapedia. Use their resources to educate yourself and send them part of your own personal worldly power in monetary form. We all know that the forces explicitly arrayed against white survival are currently much stronger than the forces explicitly lined up for our defense. And so every one of us needs to turn our own individual power into useful collective power by contributing to white projects of the reach and prominence of Metapedia. If you can do something, then do it. If you can't, then try to tell someone else who can. It really is that simple. Write for Metapedia. Send them funds. These are our guys. So help them out. Okay, now I have the last installment of the America panel discussion for you. Following this episode of Radio Free Northwest, we will make the entire panel discussion available for download, as has been requested by several people. So look for that. Here's the final segment.
I want to point out that you absolutely have to make sure that children are not exposed to things that only adults can deal with. Because, as you say, censorship may not be necessary provided children are kept safe long enough to form adult opinions about the world before they're exposed to things that adults need to deal with. I guess that would be my only factor, is no corrupting the youth.
Yes, and I think in a properly healthy all-white nation, a racial state, where all the population knows and understands, and the mythos that is built around it supports completely that this is our purpose and we are unique in the world. Maybe we're unique, maybe we're not, maybe there are multiple white racial states around the world. Hopefully that would be the case. The point is, we are constituted as a preserve for our unique people. Mm-hmm. That can be maintained, I think, pretty effectively, pretty easily as distinct throughout the world. You will have this problem, though, with the people who can't handle being the best, because this kind of all-white racial state will be the best damn state in the world.
Give it a chance, yes, it will be.
It will be, and it is just the fact. The best always must deal with the worst, and we must effectively deal with the worst, otherwise we will be undermined by the worst in society, in any human enterprise. We have to figure out, we have to work it.
Getting into the issue of, and this is partly, you know, America has always had a libertarian bent, and okay, that was pretty acceptable back when you had the first actual Americans that had created the country. They were willingly self-imposing standards, and they did so successfully. And that's important for libertarianism. Go ahead.
And this is a key point on the quality of the people that created America. I'm not just talking the upper classes, the founding fathers, the learned men. The quality and the robustness of the people who took the voyage across from the old country for the purposes of courageously expanding into a new land that was hostile to them, because the people who came over knew all about the Indians and that this was a colonization effort in a new and untamed land. And by and large, the people who came over were a hearty, robust, creative people of a higher stripe than the ones who were left behind. But as time has passed, time has progressed, our people have degenerated as life has gotten softer, as we have overcome nature through our technological brilliance and innovation and scientific mastery. So the thing is, the best have got to rule is one of the principles of National Socialism.
Yes.
The best must rule, but we also have to take care of the worst and isolate their influence in our society as best we can,
yes,
while being honorable and maintaining our own standards in doing so. But there absolutely is a sanitation process that must take place of the worst elements of society to maintain anything good.
And Don has
to illustrate the American way. When I took an American history course at the university level, we were taught that during the cowboy era, most people who died as a result of gunfire were shot in the back. So this is the typical American strategy, and this is the American way.
Well, and what's really important to point out here is that, you know, we all agree there's a libertarian bent to America, and back to, because there's the Rush Limbaugh-style American exceptionalism, which is, to be completely objective, that is an actual thing. But why is that exceptionalism possible? Or rather, why was that exceptionalism possible?
Because it came from an exceptional biological people.
Correct. Those people chose to be exceptional, such that a top-down ruler was not really necessary because they provided their own. If you want to talk about genuine self-sufficiency, that might be the best example of it in all history. Now, the trouble is, if that's the exception, by definition, we're admitting that we may not be able to have that sort of society all the time, which is very interesting because, as you point out, there is natural leadership, and the state needs to take on a healthy form of natural leadership and say the best people make decisions for everybody. And just to reemphasize the fact that this is an exception rather than the rule. And this starts to get into issues of, part of the reason I really, really like getting rid of the whole kill your inner Uyghur, stop being an American, and then stop being an American is that, you know, the Northwest Front is not an explicitly National Socialist outfit. We don't expect people to be National Socialists. We don't require it. But it's pretty blatantly obvious to those who are familiar with the subject that 90% of the proposed programs are essentially National Socialism, light. And one of the things I had to realize, what's a good way to put this, is that when people come in to new types of politics or new ideas, they tend to carry along whatever they were. And I think I don't know how to help people with this process, because to give everyone, even the people who adamantly disagree with us currently, due credit, it seems as though people are at least trying to do the right thing, in most cases, in coming into white nationalism. Part of the trouble is that somebody will come in with libertarianism and not want to drop the libertarianism because they perceive there to be some economic threat to them in National Socialism, which is absolutely false. That's a lie of the kosher conservatives.
Yes, this is part of the false myths around national socialism, because the wrong side won in World War II.
Correct. Yeah. And it's worth noting that the private enterprise, whatever, that's perfectly okay when everybody around you is white, and strictly speaking, private enterprise is the way it has to be anyway, because private property is just a necessity. Regardless of whether or not someone likes private property, property needs to be private. You know, people need to be able to keep nearly everything that they earn, or else we have a problem.
Yeah, so there's no conflict with that at all under national socialism.
And in fact, there are such things as beefsteak Nazis or left-wing Nazis or Marxist light. They exist. They're called Strasserites or Strasserists, or depending on how you want to say it. But I will note that Hitler ultimately didn't care for them and had the Strasser brothers shot. And this was largely
sanitation efforts.
Sanitation.
You see,
efforts.
You don't censor people; you kill them.
Well, but there are a lot of people who are confused about.
That's a bit of a harsh form of censorship.
It's not censorship.
It's not censorship.
It's not. No, it's sanitation.
Exactly. Well, and it's important to understand that you know, I and a few others here have been reading a book called Hitler's Revolution, and I don't remember the author off the top of my head, but you'll all know it when you see it. It's actually an amazing, just like, if you were to read some of Hitler's speeches and not be told it was Adolf Hitler, you'd think you were reading a Trump speech. And I'm not at all comparing.
Presumably that's why Trump got elected.
Well, and that's what's funny about it, is that what you have to realize is that the way white peoples have lived naturally over the millennia was formalized into a system, and it's called National Socialism. And this is, you know, I hadn't planned on going here tonight, but we've kind of just gone there naturally. Socialism. There are a whole lots of words. I actually like the word racism, even though it was made up by a Bolshevik liar. I actually like it because, yeah, races exist. I believe that races exist, and I believe they're different, and I notice the differences. I'm a racist. I'm a sexist. Sexes exist, they're different, and I notice those differences, and they're important.
Vive la différence.
Yeah, vive la différence.
Yes, the pejorative connotations built up around these were built up for political purposes, and as you actually look linguistically at what the words mean, they're perfectly fine words. Rehabilitation of the word racist and racism is one of the things we need to do.
Absolutely.
It's perfectly natural, perfectly fine, perfectly sound. It's a pejorative that was put into place by the Jews to eliminate the concept of racial loyalty for whites.
Right.
So, you know, all the other races can maintain their loyalty to their people. That's perfectly fine.
And it's worth
the Jews
noting.
Can, but of course, white people can't. That's racist.
It's worth noting that only works on white people because only white people are beneficent enough to everybody around them for them to even care.
Yes.
And that right there is the crowning achievement of the white race itself, is that we are so excellent that we can be good to everybody.
Yeah. The other races are, by and large, simply not duped by anti-racism and anti-racist rhetoric, but they certainly will take their opportunity to use it against us, as the Jews intend that they do.
Correct. And it was mentioned earlier that, you know, we've got the free speech, we've got private enterprise and all that. There's this thing called capitalism that isn't actually the free market. And this is where so many people get so confused about white nationalism and national socialism, is that, you know, I've periodically had to field some contacts from people post-Harold's death that flat out ask, we really, really like what you're up to and we like your ideas, but we're a little worried whether or not you're a socialist movement because we're capitalists. And I'll do everything I can to send them Harold's writings on the subject and like, hey, go find this part in this book that I'm going to send you on PDF. It's various Northwest novels have discussed that. The fact of the matter is that, especially with the whole so-called free speech thing right now, capitalism is just as Jewish as communism. It's just private sector communism, where instead of the government punishing you, it's the private sector will refuse to interact with you.
Yes, there's simply been a commingling of concepts here, once again, pejoratively couched.
Yeah. The problem is not free market capitalism. The problem is monopoly capitalism.
Monopoly and
yes.
Jewish capitalism.
Yeah, and the capitalism is money makes the rules. So whoever owns all the money gets to decide what you do. Now, that's a problem.
Whoever has the gold makes the rules. Right?
Yes.
That's their new
gold
rule.
It's the most Jewish thing ever, and it's the most disgusting thing ever. Because, like, you know what rat poison is, right? Rat poison is 99% good food. It's the 1% of poison that kills you. Capitalism is 99% good economics. It's the kikery 1% that kills you. And it's worse than Marxism because it's longer lived and it looks like it's healthy. So it's very deceptive, very, very Jewish, to deceive someone. Just like I'm a racist, a sexist, a bigot, I'm also a socialist. Let's rehabilitate the word socialism, because the original socialists were not communists, were not Marxists, were not any of that stuff. You know, things that I do affect the people around me. And in this really long panel discussion we've had, we previously mentioned that certain things just cannot be allowed in an all-white society because, you know, let's pretend that economics are not an issue, that everybody is economically independent and has all they could possibly want economically. You can still do things to people that affect everybody. You can still cheat on your spouse and destroy multiple families. You can still kill somebody and affect everybody's lives. All of their loved ones are permanently affected by this. You can still race mix and introduce something to the society that should not be there. And part of the reason is perfectly justifiable to have laws against race mixing is that, as Don points out, there's not really a good solution once your society is physically polluted. As you say, there has to be a sanitation effort. It's perfectly reasonable for a healthy government to say no race mixing because you produce something to which there's not a good antidote other than a bullet. And we're actually the nice guys because we want to avoid that problem existing.
Exactly.
Yes.
Bear in mind that National Socialist Germany was completely cool with every country on the world being whatever they were as long as National Socialist Germany was left alone to be white Germans. And so socialism is just a reality. Now, like racism is a reality, you can do two things with that. You can go the left-wing route that says suppress all differences, or if differences exist, it's the product of evil or discrimination. Just a second, phone ringing.
Do you want to finish out that point?
Yeah, we'll finish up this point. So this is important to understand. This is, you know, for new people, why is national socialism a good thing? And the reality is that, one, it has private enterprise. You can keep your property there. But most importantly, understand the reaction to reality. You can either affirm reality or deny it. So racism. You could go the left-wing route, which says if there's a racial difference, it's because of discrimination and we have to eliminate differences and all of that stuff. Or you could go the right-wing route, the white nationalist route, and say these differences exist, they're important, we have to respect them and we have to live with them, and we have to act in accordance with reality.
Yes, this is one of the amazing things about the left, the fact that they have the arrogance and the twisted idiocy to call themselves the reality-based community when they are so detached from reality in almost everything that they have
propound. Like, we are racist, they are anti-racist. Like, we are sexist in the positive sense, where we want good things for both sexes based on their natural inclinations. A leftist would be anti-sexist. Well, let's think about the word
fantasist is a good
fantasist.
Word.
Fantasist. Let's think about the socialism language there for a second. I accept that socialization is a reality. Socialism exists because everything I do, even if it's not economic, affects all the people around me all the time, which is why we're not a libertarian or an anarchist outfit, because I acknowledge that socialism is a reality and I don't drag other people down with me. The left, like they are anti-racist and anti-sexist, they are just anti-social. Everything they promote is the opposite of what you should do. And to repeat something I said earlier, national socialism is just the codification of the way white people lived for centuries and millennia. The way we are supposed to act around each other is in this way, rather than we're supposed to be socially cohesive, socially responsible, and lift each other up by means of not dragging each other down. As Jason has pointed out, we are going very, very long, and I think we're all about tapped, but we kind of just went naturally to the subject of what national socialism is and how we're different, how a white nationalist, generically, ideology is different than Americanism. And the fact of the matter is that everything national socialism and white nationalism encourages is really what a normal American thinks they're trying to live their life as. Now ponder that. Are there any closing thoughts? All right, I think we've said all we have to say, so everybody take care out there.
I had intended to have more for you this time, just as Andy had, and coincidentally on his same subject of the basics. Actually, regarding mastery, specifically of our rhetorical craft, through a return to some of the basics of white nationalism. It really has been an overly eventful week, though, so I haven't been able to put in the time that matter deserves. However, I will have that ready for Andy's rotation with the show next time. Meanwhile, I want to acknowledge another member of the headquarters group, AJ, who put together a nice bonus broadcast of commentary and music that we posted and sent out a link to this weekend, and which was well received. AJ has most valuably brought back the musical component to our broadcasts. He will have more for us in the future, but his effort has motivated me to go into Harold's music archives and grab a song for you to close out this week's RFN. In keeping thematically with the conclusion of the America panel discussion, which above all else has counseled our critical need for emotionally accepting the end of America as we know it, coming to terms with it, and getting on with the work of creating what will come next, this is Destroy the USA from Renegade Broadcasting, performed by Shiksa Goddess.
Gotta rest before we take the throne as king. Didn't do it right, screwed up. the chicks with dicks, and now our weakness is gonna show. Humpies wives are gone and fled to the country. We need them here to die fast in the cities. They should be living in the ghettos with all the rat-infested black holes. The dreidel's burning in my yarmulke, it feels like a brick. So much backlash, can we do this? We look to London like a war hero, but this is taking way too long. Giving them a big outbreak scare. I got my hands up and pray to Yahweh. Make the products with BPA. Yeah. Gonna destroy the USA. Yeah. Gonna destroy the USA. We have gotta set this right, or the whites are gonna fight. Us out just like old times. They're slowly catching on with all this white dust. So I put my hands up and pray to Yahweh. Will us Jews make it out okay? They're armed to the teeth, oh yeah. And we're all feeling pretty scared. I got my hands up and banging Yahweh. Fighting fairly is not our forte. Yeah. Help us destroy the U.S.
My concern is doing away with whiteness. Whiteness is a form of racial oppression, sure. The suggestion is that it is somehow possible to separate whiteness from oppression, and it is not. There can be no white race without the phenomenon of white supremacy. In the same way, if you abolish racial oppression, you do away with whiteness. Treason to whiteness is loyalty to humanity.
Your views are fairly well received in academia.
Yes, they're legitimate. Not to say that everyone agrees, but sure. And the task is to bring this minority together in such a way that it makes it impossible for the legacy of whiteness to continue to reproduce itself.
Radio Free Northwest is brought to you by the Northwest Front, P.O. Box 2188, Bremerton, Washington, 98310. You can visit the party on our website at www.northwestfront.org. Until next week, hail victory.
Oh, what glorious pride and sorrow.